Welcome to the Lehigh Valley with Love podcast. I'm your host, George Wacker, and in this episode, we're diving into a crucial topic, reentry and the challenges faced by formerly incarcerated individuals as they return to society. Reentry is a process that affects us all, whether we realize it or not. Did you know that 65% of people released from prison end up reoffending, or that defendants who can't afford bail often spend 90 to 180 days behind bars before their case is even resolved? These barriers make successful reintegration nearly impossible, but there are solutions, like expanding mental health and drug courts, addressing pretrial detention challenges, and improving job opportunities for returning citizens. Today, we are joined by Dr. Michael Patero, Director of Corrections for Northampton County, Jose Rivera, Community Engagement Coordinator at United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley, and Attorney David D. Ritter, Criminal Defense Attorney with Cate Law Offices. They'll share their insights and experiences to help us understand the system's flaws and explore ways to create better outcomes. Before we jump in, I'd like to thank Dr. Joseph Roy for his invaluable help in producing this podcast, as well as our sponsors who make these conversations possible. WDIY 88.1 FM, Lehigh Valley Health Network, Wind Creek Event Center, Michael Bernadin of Remax Real Estate, Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub, and our friends at Benko Beverage Company. Now let's get into it.
My name is Jose Rivera. I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator for the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. Because reentry before was, there was no such word as reentry. It was ex-con, felon. Mm. You were just coming out of prison. And those were the labels that got stuck with you. Where now with reentering, it's like, okay, you're reentering society as a better person. How do we do this? How do we navigate these systems that were built to punish you to now go back to uplift you and make you a productive citizen? Because no matter how you look at it, whether we were committing crimes or getting high, in our minds, we thought we were always right. Mm-hmm. Like there was nothing wrong because it was survival. Mm-hmm. How do we survive when everything's built against us? And sometimes some of these things are self-inflicted, but a lot of these are systems. Like with me, I had a fifth grade teacher tell me, tell your family to save for bail, not for college. As of right now, I should be starting my master's program in the next couple months.
My name's Dr. Mike Patero. I am Director of Corrections for Northampton County, and I'm also an Associate Professor of Criminal Justice for American Military University, so I have kind of dual hats. I'm now going into my 36th year, so it's hard to believe that, but ironically, I started out in the prison system as a field officer, and I'm coming full circle to retire from my current position as Director of Corrections. So I hold a PhD in criminal justice, master's in public administration, bachelor's in criminal justice.
So, why is reentry unsuccessful? When it is unsuccessful, why is it?
Yeah, unfortunately, the United States has a very poor record when it comes to recidivism rates. I think we're at 68, 69% will reoffend and return to prison, so those odds aren't that great. However, in defense of our nation's prisons and jails, including my own, I think we do a great job of preparing individuals to get back into society. However, when they get back into society, society's not as forgiving and as forgetful. Plus, over 90% of those that are released nationally will return to the same communities where the problems originated.
Sure.
So unlike someone like you and I, where we could change people, places, and things, you know, if we want to have a do-over in life, they unfortunately return to the same environment. So you can make great progress while you're incarcerated, but then as soon as you step foot in a community, now that's the test, you know, and you're dealing with a lot of triggers. You know, you're dealing with psychological triggers. Like you go past the place, that's where I used to get high. That's the guy who sold me drugs, and you know, where I used to drink. So unfortunately, change comes down to each individual. So it's a little bit more complicated than most people think.
Certainly. My name is Attorney David D. Ritter. I'm from Orfield, Pennsylvania. I have worked as a full-time public defender in Lehigh County, Pennsylvania for 5 years. For the past 2 years, I've worked at a private law firm, Cate Law Offices, KITAY, Kitay Law Offices. And I've been involved in criminal law and criminal justice for 27 years.
Can you talk a little bit about why reentry, when we're talking about, you know, probation and parole, is often unsuccessful, and what factors contribute to individuals returning to prison despite completing their sentences?
Certainly. So when, you know, the judge bangs the gavel and pronounces that final sentence, whether the person is incarcerated, being incarcerated, or being released from incarceration, unfortunately, oftentimes the district attorney and the defense attorney leave the courtroom, and that's the end of their relationship with a client. And we don't hear from them, unfortunately, unless that is it's an unsuccessful discharge from incarceration, and they will be back oftentimes reincarcerated and going back in front of the same judge, perhaps to receive additional jail time. So some of the things that plague inmates who are leaving jail and trying to go back out into society are the same things that often plague them and brought them into the prison. Oftentimes, there's mental health issues. If the person is not taking their medications appropriately, sometimes they'll find themselves having problems with the law and finding themselves incarcerated. At the end of their sentence, if internally at, for example, at the Lehigh County Jail, if there's any difficulty in getting that person back on their meds appropriately, that's going to present a problem when the person gets out. Do they have a prescription in place when they get out? Do they have a psychologist or psychiatrist in place ready to monitoring their progress? So one of the main things is the mental health component of their lives. If they didn't have it in place in the beginning, sometimes they don't have it in place when they're attempting to get out. Another thing also is treatment, not only for mental health, but for drug and alcohol. If they don't have that system in place to hold them accountable and help them with their sobriety, when they hit the pavement and they're released from, let's say, a county jail, it's very easy to very quickly fall back into old people, places, and things and pick up with their addiction. And then when that happens, they find themselves right back in trouble and going back to see that same judge.
How did I end up here?
Yeah.
5 years of hard grind and hard work. I started at Promise Neighborhood as a volunteer. And at that time I was working at Sam Adams and going to community college and an active alumni with Treatment Trends in Kenan House. I was discharged January 21st, 2019, and I ended up in front of LTRIC because at that point in my life, I was an LTRIC student out of Frackville, out of the prison. And like, I was blessed to go to LTRIC after I saw which colleges were involved in it. You have names like Villanova, and I was like, oh, wow. And I couldn't fathom it. Like, here comes this tiny community college saying, hey, you're accepted here and we're gonna give you a business degree. And I jumped on it.
And kind of on the flip side of that, what makes reentry successful? Is it, you know, the things that you just said and kind of flipping them on their head is kind of discuss a little bit more?
Yeah, we've come full circle as far as what we're doing to prepare them for reentry now. So for example, one of my favorites is cognitive behavioral therapy, which in layman's terms is basically taking your distorted way of thinking and changing it into something more socially appropriate. So for example, if you have an anger problem, I can't change your anger problem. That's just your temper, your personality. But we can teach you how to deal with that so you know when you're getting angry and then to find alternative ways of handling that.
You talked about some of the strategies that can make reentry successful. Could you kind of dive into that a little bit more? Are there any, you know, things that you have seen or interventions that have proven effective for individuals who do not return to prison?
Well, one of the things that I've seen, and I'm going to give a big shout out to the chief probation officer of Lehigh County. She's a friend of mine. Her name is Pam Sheffer. And she took time out of her day to sit down with me and update me on some of the things that are in place to help inmates who are about to be paroled. There is a coalition that they recently received funding for I believe they call it the Reentry Coalition. They've been successful in obtaining funding for this. It is a group of people, stakeholders in the criminal justice system, and it's my understanding there are even some successfully paroled defendants who are part of this team. And they have a coalition of people who try to do everything they can to make sure that everything is in place for the success of the inmates who are about to be released and become parolees, including, again, mental health medications, treatment for drug and alcohol, and to help with housing. That's another big thing. You know, housing, of course, is extremely expensive, and the prices are not going down, they're going up. So finding a place for people where they can live is problematic, but these stakeholders are doing everything they can to make sure that when inmates hit the ground outside of the jail, that they have everything in place to be able to survive and to be a successful parolee.
What does the role of probation and parole play in reentry towards a successful reentry?
If you look at it this way, Pennsylvania is an indeterminate sentencing state, meaning that we have a minimum and maximum. Some mm-hmm. states are just maximum, so there is no parole. But for us, we have the minimum and the maximum. So ideally, when someone is sentenced to, say, 5 to 10 years, hypothetically, they're eligible for parole on the fifth year. It's not a right, a constitutional right. It's a privilege. It's an eligibility date. So now they're released and they're on parole. So you have a couple factors to consider. One is if the individual connects with their parole officer. Unfortunately, in this profession, there's different personalities. Some are a little bit more enforcement oriented, which is not part of what I subscribe to. Mm-hmm. And others are more kind of case managers, more social work types that try to help them go along. And I think that comes with experience that after a while, you have to expect, for example, if someone has a heroin problem, there's probably a good chance they may use again. But to send them back to prison, what point is that? You know, try to get them more help. So I think that more education, we're starting to learn more and realize that rehabilitation does work, can work, but we need people like probation and parole officers to buy into it.
Again, you talked about some of the ways that probation and parole play a factor in reentry. You know, I don't know if the public's perception may just be when they, hey, you have to check in with your parole officer or something to that effect. But can you talk a little bit more about what role the probation and parole has in the reentry process?
Well, certainly, the perception might be, like you said, just, you know, check in every once in a while and don't get arrested again. But it's been my experience that the parole office, particularly in Lehigh County, Pennsylvania, is very good at being a friend to parolees who are out and being released. And I think the saying has been made that, you know, your parole officer can be your best friend or your worst enemy. It depends on your actions. I have often advised some of my clients who are struggling with drugs and alcohol or mental health, perhaps going into relapse in their addictions or struggling with their mental health stability. I have told them, go to your parole officer. They are your friend. They can see if there are resources available to you. Let's help get you on track with your sobriety and your mental health. And my experience with the officers of the Adult Probation and Parole Department of Lehigh County has been very good in that they are willing to hold their people accountable for their actions, but also reach out with them to get services in place mm-hmm. to make sure that they are stable with their mental health and stable with sobriety and stable with housing and having an overall stable living situation. So my advice has always been talk to your parole officer. They're going to help you.
Even having the right probation and parole officer makes a difference. I am blessed to have a parole officer who knew me for right now almost 13 years. And he understands my struggles, and it's not about locking me up. It's about having those real conversations with me. If he sees or if he thinks I'm messing up, he pulls me right aside and calls, hey, what's going on? I keep myself busy. And this is where I use I at, because no one's going to give me anything unless they see me working for it. And no one's going to, I don't want to be a punchline for the people who've supported me, like right now, JB, Charlie Marcon, Lee Butts, Cynthia Mota, our mayor, all these people, our school board in ASD supported me. So how do I look like going out there doing something goofy for 5 years from now when I'm sitting in prison and they try to help the next person? Someone says, oh, he's going to be the next Jose. He's going to do good for a couple years and then poof, right back in prison. So it's like these people have given me something that I threw away. I threw away my time. And they gave me a little bit of theirs to extend mine. So, and that's how I look at it.
There was one thing that Jose brought up. He said, if you get a good parole officer, yeah. And he kind of said it in passing and almost in jest, but I would imagine, what do you get a bad one, right?
Like, yeah.
So is there something too within your industry, not, I hate the words good and bad, but when you said more to like a reentry mindset instead of a law enforcement, is that something that you currently see, I guess, in your world, like changing?
We do, yeah. You're seeing more probation parole officers that are more willing to work with their clients, more willing to help them get through it. We'll help them not just with their issues such as addiction or mental illness, but also with housing, transportation issues. The little things that you and I may take for granted on a daily basis, they're challenges for them. How to create a savings account, a checking account, which many of them have never had. So I think you're seeing a change in the dynamics of people like myself and their mindset rather than that punishment orientation that I had in the 80s and 90s when we were slamming offenders. We've come kind of like we're going doing a 180 essentially to try to help individuals rather than harm them more.
And does some of that come from learning from your mistakes?
Like, oh,
you
absolutely.
Said in the 90s, right? If you absolutely. Look back and go, oh man, we could have maybe done it differently.
Oh, 100% so. I even include myself. You know, when I first entered this, I was more punitive oriented. If you committed the crime, you need to do some serious time. But I don't think that way anymore because we've learned that being incarcerated is not necessarily going to change behaviors. It's a punishment. So in order to change behaviors, we need programs, evidence-based programs specifically, that are have been shown or proven to change behaviors.
And I think too, if we say we want these people punished, but then they do their time, I think that's like a popular sentiment. Like, do your time and then it's over.
Right.
But is that true? Do you find that there are a lot of stigmas or some hurdles, even just socially, for those reentering to get over that?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the protective factors we look at is getting a job. If you have a job, it's a good thing. But a lot of employers will review your resume and there's going to be a big blank spot where you serve time. Or on the forms, like when I was younger, the form asked, have you ever been convicted of a felony offense? If yes, please explain. Today, applications say, have you ever been arrested? If so, please explain. So you're knocking people essentially out right from the get-go without even having them explain their situation. But you would answer it honestly. And say you have 30 people for one position, you would probably not even get the interview. So what they've created, and including Northampton County's, County Executive McClure has been a big proponent of this, it's called Ban the Box. So in other words, that checkbox, getting it off of application. So this way people have an opportunity to show themselves to a potential employer without that stigma. You know, a lot of these individuals have had horrific childhoods, maybe grew up in a poor environment. It's not an excuse, you know, not to excuse their behaviors, but we need second chances because, like I said, over 90% are going to be released, whether it's today or 40 years from today. So the communities have to be a little bit more forgiving and accepting of these individuals. And the majority, the overwhelming majority, definitely want to get on their feet and go straight.
When we talk about parole officers and you know, making sure that they parolees have a good relationship with them, you know, how are parole officers, I guess, I don't want to use the word kept in check, but how are they kind of made sure that they aren't maybe violating people on a whim or something like that? You know, how is that process?
Well, that's a great question. And there certainly is a check in place. When the parole officer is dealing with their client, and let's say they come to the conclusion that they have violated some technical aspect of their supervision, whether that be maintaining a stable residence, checking in regularly, maybe they were alleged to have used illegal drugs, it's within their purview to take them into custody and return them to the Lehigh County Jail. However, then they are quickly brought before the court. And their allegations don't just stand. That's not the end of it. Now we go to a hearing. It's typically called a Gagnon 2 hearing, where the probation officer is there with the, usually with an assistant district attorney representing the Commonwealth. And on the other side, the client or inmate now can have their choice of counsel. They can hire any licensed attorney in Pennsylvania, or if they cannot afford counsel, they are provided a public defender. And the judge then has a hearing as to whether or not there's been indeed a violation of the supervision. And not only that, but then what is the appropriate punishment? The probation department may recommend the person be reincarcerated. The judge can agree with that, or the judge can say, no, there's exceptional circumstances here, for example. I'm not going to reincarcerate. I'm going to give them another chance. Or they may say, I'm going to parole you into a drug and alcohol treatment facility or a mental health facility because that's what I think causes violation. So there is definitely a check that is in place on parole and probation officers.
One way to reduce recidivism is to decrease the number of people in pretrial or those sentenced to jail time. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Is this like a reasonable approach? Where people are sitting in there, they can't make bail, but it's not for something like, do you really need to be in prison right now or jail in this?
Things have changed. I would say over the last decade, we've seen change in bail laws. We've seen change in judges sentencing individuals to more community-based type of programs rather than jail. So because jail and prison, for the most part, worsens the condition. It doesn't necessarily make your conditions better. So we are trying to do so. And I have to say, this is an odd thing to say, but COVID actually helped as well, because with COVID, prisons and jails were forced to get rid of individuals because essentially prisons and jails were melting pots to spread the disease. So we've continued on that. So we've been out of that COVID era for a little bit of time. So, but our population, for example, in my facility, our population is at the lowest it's ever been. So it gives you an indication on a small scale that we're moving in the right direction as a nation to try to keep people out of jail and prison if we can.
I mean, this seems obvious, right? We know the answers to this, but can you talk a little bit more specifically about how access to housing, you talked a little bit about employment, but those two things, how they can really affect reentry?
Oh, absolutely. For one, for a parole plan, you have to have a place to live, and that place can't be a temporary residence. For example, if I'm getting out, I can't go live with my girlfriend. You know, you have to be on the lease or something like that. So unfortunately, though, it's a double-edged sword, because a lot of landlords in particular are now able to access criminal records, maybe a watered-down version, but they can get access to it, and they can essentially not let you stay in their place. So you have parole that has pretty stringent conditions, and I understand the reasoning behind it, but we need a little bit more give and take there with housing. So again, that's a problem that I haven't necessarily, in my opinion, seen any progress with, but I could be mistaken.
How do you feel that public perceptions of formerly incarcerated individuals can also impact their reentry success? And are there things in place that can mitigate that at all?
Well, that's tough. I think there is a public perception that someone that just was released from jail or is on parole or is under some type of supervision, isn't the person that that we want working at our establishment. And that's unfortunate. You know, I think second chances are an important thing. People need to be given a chance to show that they're going to be, you know, trustworthy employees, trustworthy workers. So what can we do to change that? Well, in recent years, we have seen Governor Wolf and Governor Shapiro take steps with legislation that has helped with sealing of certain criminal records and arrest records, and the expungement of certain records, something that, unless it was exceptional circumstances, a conviction was permanent unless the person died or turned 70. So in the past decade, there's been really a significant change in allowing people to pursue sealing and expunging of the records. And that is one thing that goes a long way to clearing their records and making them more employable, of course, in the eyes of employers.
Talk a little bit about how the legal system can play a role in shaping reentry. Are there, and this is more like kind of, I guess, your opinion or what you're comfortable talking about, what structural reforms or better support do you see in the future that could be done? You know, stuff that you're saying, hey, a couple years from now, it'd be great to be in that position.
Oh, absolutely. I think the courts have done a tremendous job of kind of like remodeling their approach to it. I'll give you an example. The DUI courts, which came about in the 80s, right? They were hailed as a success. So next thing you know, we have mental health courts. We have homeless courts. We have juvenile courts. And we even have veteran courts, which I'm a big proponent of. You go overseas, you serve our country, you come back, you have some issues with PTSD and so forth, and you end up in the criminal justice system. That's simply wrong. So we have dedicated, we call them specialized courts, to deal with those individuals. So it's a less punitive approach, in other words. The whole idea is to try to help you because, for example, if I have an addiction problem, the court knows that the addiction is my primary issue, crime is secondary. If we address the heroin addiction, crime should go down. So it's got a simple concept and it's proven to be very successful. And I think you're seeing judges today that are more receptive and more willing to kind of go that extra mile.
How does access to housing and employment affect reentry success? And then is there anything going on? Like, are there any legal measures or policies in place, or is there any improvement that could be made here?
Well, housing is a big thing because the problem is, when someone is about to be paroled, a parole officer typically goes over into the jail and starts doing their paperwork to make sure that that transition is smooth and that the department knows where that person is going to be located so that it's a safe place. And the problem is, a lot of times these inmates do not have places to go. So how do you parole someone into a stable situation if they have nowhere to go? That's one of the issues that this panel is trying to address. They're trying to make sure that, you know, that they're doing everything they can to get them into a safe housing. And one of the big problems for the inmates is a lot of times they came in, let's say they don't have their paperwork. They don't have their social security card. They don't have their driver's license. Well, even if they are able to get out and go to a place, what's the first thing that's probably going to be asked of them is, can I see your driver's license? Can I see your social security card? Do you have a credit card to put your security deposit down? And if these inmates don't have those things when they went in, they're not going to have them when they're on their way out. So there's always an effort to try and make sure they have their paperwork so that they can have a successful transition out of the jail.
What would you tell someone if they're interested in this? Maybe it's even just this, having conversations and sharing this kind of stuff. Is it talking to your representatives? Is it, how would a person who's interested in this make a change?
Talking to your representatives, obviously they're the ones that create the laws, so you need those decision makers. I'll give you a perfect example. You know, I publish a lot of articles, I publish books, but the individuals who read them are fellow professors, students that are forced to read them. Right. You know, and not necessarily to politicians. So in other words, I've been able to kind of hone in on a lot of these problems, and it's all based on science, but is it getting out to the people who really truly need to make those decisions? So talking about is one, getting rid of misconceptions. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, you're unsalvageable, like you can't be treated, you can't change, and that's simply mistaken.
Even things like the word reentry.
Right? Sure.
It used to be, just parole or parolee, and maybe moving away from some of those terms. That's something I can do. Like, I can say reentry, or, you know, if I know someone, make sure that I'm not just judging them based on.
Absolutely. Right, because they're condescending terms in a sense, you know, and especially with kids. Kids are easily influenced. So if you're calling them delinquent, delinquent's a heavy label. So you want to try to get away from those labels. So because, and this is my experience, so my opinion, but most of these individuals already have low self-confidence and low self-esteem. So by us as criminal justice system pummeling them more with condescending terms, derogatory terms, that's not helpful. We need to build people up rather than tear them down.
As far as you're concerned, or I guess in your opinion, or as much as you'd like to say, do you feel like there needs to be more reform? Do you feel like the parole and reentry system in Pennsylvania, clearly it's not perfect, but kind of what are your opinions of it currently, and where do you maybe see it in 5 to 10 years?
Well, I'm always a believer that any system of any government is always, you know, it should always be looked at, and reform of any system should always be on the table. For example, the bail system in certain states, there have been significant reforms on bail. Now, it's my personal opinion that I believe some of those reforms have gone too far, and I think the pendulum is getting pushed back by the public. I don't think it advisable that people who commit violent acts should be released upon on society again without significant bail being in place and being posted to secure their return to court. On the other hand, you know, things can be too strong. There may be some counties in Pennsylvania where I am somewhat, you know, shocked at hearing some of the bails that are imposed, and I think there's no way that anyone could post that for what maybe I would deem a relatively minor nonviolent offense. So it's always finding that middle ground. Now, I will say I'm a native of Lehigh County. I've been working in law enforcement capacities here as an attorney for 27 years. And I will say, I think Lehigh County does a really good job. They have an office called Lehigh Valley Pretrial Services that monitors the people going into the jail, interviews them, talks to the family, and goes to the court and makes a recommendation for bail, which the court does not have to agree with, but their recommendation is usually relied upon because they do a good job, and they talk to the inmate, they talk to the family, and they get an idea of what the situation is, and they can present that picture to the judge, and then the judge can make the determination about bail and usually will follow their recommendation because they have a good reputation for doing a good job. So do I see many reforms coming? The way I see Lehigh County conducting business, I don't see that reforms are necessary or forthcoming, but it's always good to review every system in place and make sure that we're doing the best for all citizens, not only those that are going into potential incarceration, but again, for the citizens on the outside and their own protection.
This is what success looks like if we're all working together towards our goals. If we're going to talk about creating the leaders we want in the future, this is how it starts. It's not I do this, you do this, and you do this, and we're all doing it individually. How do we do it collective? How do we do it together? Then how do we collect the data to see that we're moving in the right direction together? Everyone needs to stop working in these separate silos and saying we, or I'm doing this, I'm doing that. It should be a we initiative. We are doing this, and we start with the families, with the community, and that's how we move forward. Like, our society has moved away from so many communal things. Everyone wants to do it independently, and it doesn't work.
Lehigh Valley Health Network is now proudly part of Jefferson Health, and together we're bringing you more hospitals and outpatient locations for added convenience, more nationally ranked specialists for expert care, more clinical trials, and more innovation to improve outcomes. We're investing in your well-being and building healthier communities because more expertise and convenient care means better outcomes and a healthier you. Jefferson Health and Lehigh Valley Health Network, together for the future of care.
Thank you again to our guests, Michael, Jose, and David. Thank you to our sponsors. And also thank you to Dr. Joseph Roy for producing this podcast and helping me put it all together. Really appreciate you listening and hope you can tune in for more important stories from Lehigh Valley with Love. Visit lvwithlove.com for more info. Thank you so much.